WWDC 2020 just happened, and we've got all the details.
I have the latest Infinite Runner just for you.
And I'm going to show you how to install fonts on your iOS device.
My gosh, it's time for iOS Today! iOS Today comes to you from Twit's LastPass Studios. You're focused on security, but are your employees? LastPass can ensure they are by making access and authentication seamless, whether they're working in the office or remotely. Visit LastPass.com/Twit to learn more.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This episode of iOS Today is brought to you by Mint Mobile. They provide the same premium network coverage you're used to, but at a fraction of the cost, because everything is online. Mint Mobile makes it easy to cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month with their 3-month introductory plan. Plus, you'll get the plan shipped to your door free at mintmobile.com/iOS.
It's the horn of WWDC.
Developers, gather!
the development horn has rung.
Developers, assemble!
Gather your knife and squish your bugs.
It's WWDC time. Hello, Micah Sargent.
Hello, Leo Laporte.
And we just got off a hour, 48-minute keynote from WWDC that has our eyes spinning and just rolling in our head. I'm excited. Are you excited?
I'm so pumped. There's a lot of good stuff and a lot of stuff that I honestly, I'm a little sad to say that I shouldn't say this, but I'm a little sad that we're doing this show right now only because I want to go digging into the developer documents.
With it.
I want to find out what all they didn't announce.
There is so much more. And in fact, we decided at the last minute, because it's so interesting, to stream the next keynote, which is the State of the Union keynote. And that's the one where they go in deep dive for developers. This one was the one for regular people. But still plenty to talk about. New iOS, new iPad OS, and some great new features in both. New TV OS, Watch OS, great new features. And Mac OS, but that's for another show. We'll talk about that tomorrow on Mac Break Weekly. And, of course, the transition to Apple Silicon, their new custom design chips. We'll talk a lot about that tomorrow on Mac Break Weekly. But there's plenty for us to do here on iOS Today. Let's start with iOS 14. Oh, and good news. I'll lead with the thing they buried. The public beta is in July. So
yes.
Honestly, normally we don't recommend you do the betas, and maybe it'd be prudent to wait and see how stable it is, but there are so many long-awaited and much-desired features in this. I think for the first time in a long time, I'm probably going to install it.
Now that's interesting.
Yeah.
I tend to run things a little more risky. I've got my day phone and my night phone. So I guess this night phone, I'm going to go ahead and install the developer beta on it and see how much breaks. That's always fun. I remember working with Serenity Caldwell for iMore, and the day of WWDC, on her main device, her main iPhone, she installed the developer beta. And of course, there were lots of crashes, lots of things that were going wrong, but it was a little too risky for me. That made me a little I don't go that far with it, but I'm excited. I mean, let's start with the first thing, and I think it's important to note we recognize this too. So if you're watching this and you're going, well, Android's had this stuff forever, we recognize that many of these features that we're seeing in iOS are ones that have been on other platforms for a while. But Leo, as you put it, catch up and do it. These are good features. They should be on this platform as well.
Apple, I don't think Apple, you know, sometimes they say we invented, you know, MP3 players. Of course, that's silly.
Right.
But I don't expect them to invent everything. I expect them to perfect everything.
Yes.
And so I'm always think that the Apple implementation of a lot of these features, while slower to the game, is often more thoughtful, more well-planned, more well-executed. You know, sometimes not. Not always, but sometimes.
Yes.
But most of the time it is. And the other thing, and Apple was very clear to point this out, the big difference, of course, is privacy. And Apple is privacy first. And so all of these features, whenever possible, will protect your identity, protect your privacy, and in many cases actually operate off the phone. So where should we start on this?
We have to start with widgets.
Widgets.
We have to start with widgets.
We had heard rumors that widgets were coming to iOS. And I'll show you just, you know, I am all in on widgets. I'll show you real quickly my Android device because it's so widget heavy, right? There are icons.
Laden with widgets.
Yeah, it's laden. These second row here are the icons. But that's a widget. That's kind of a all-in-one time, weather, and calendar widget, and the calendar scrolls. This is a to-do list widget. It's AnyDo. So those things are always visible. And then you tap them, it will launch the app, which is nice. I use widgets also for Audible books, for podcasts, that's Pocket Casts, for TuneIn, YouTube Music, Sonos. So widgets to me are a big part of Android. It's one of the reasons I use Android. But this, I think, is going to be an interesting implementation. I think in many ways, I like what Apple's doing better with widgets.
Yes. So there are some things that are the same and some things that we've noticed that are different. First of all, I'm excited that we're going to have widgets kind of across the board, that the apps that are already as part of iOS will have widgets that you can add because of the developer API. Developers can take advantage of widgets. So I imagine a future in which there are loads of widgets on my home screen from all different apps. You on your Google device, you gave me inspiration whenever I was setting up my Pixel to have a page that was just devoted to audio listening stuff,
yeah,
be it music or audiobooks
and
or whatever.
That's a perfect use for a widget, because if you are listening to music, what you'd like to do is pause next track without launching the music player, without leaving what you're doing. So a widget, that's a good example. Weather's another good example where you could just look at your phone and see what the weather's going to be in more detail. And those are, in fact, two of the things that Apple showed immediately. They showed this is the weather widget right here, and here's a calendar widget, another thing that you often want. Another way these are universal is there are going to appear not only on the iPhone, but it'll also be part of iPad OS. So that's pretty exciting. There's a news widget. And one of the things they also said is that there's also what they call a smart stack of widgets. This is something Android does not do. These are widgets curated based on the apps you use the most, and they change at the time, depending on the time of day. So when you get up, you might get a calendar or a weather widget, but when it's later in the day, you might get news. At night, you might get TV guide widgets. You know, they'll change
depending on what you're doing.
On what you're doing. I think that's very interesting. Historically, though, I have to point out that Apple often implies that they have all this intelligence, you know, the Siri recommendations, for instance.
Yes.
You know, if I on my iPad pull down to the spotlight menu, it, besides the search bar, shows me Siri recommendations. Yeah, okay. I don't know what this is based on.
Exactly.
I don't know if it really reflects use. It's just kind of random.
That's the problem. There's no way to know what it's doing to determine those things. And there's no way to say, you know what, actually, I think this might be wrong. Let me make an adjustment. If it was a little more transparent, I think that would result in me wanting to sort of trust that feature more. I have it turned off on my iPad because I don't think that it's helpful to me at all.
Right.
And so that's what worries me, is what if what it thinks is the right thing for me, I feel is not the right thing for me, then can I make adjustments to the widget so that it does the right thing, or what I feel is the right thing versus what it thinks is the right thing.
Right.
And what happens whenever I don't want to use, this reminds me of, you shop on Amazon and you buy the wrong thing, and then suddenly Amazon starts recommending over and over and over and over again those things.
Often things you already bought.
Yes.
It's incredibly frustrating. It's like, I don't need that. I have it.
Right. And I don't want to be afraid of using my device the wrong way that leads to me having widgets or things that I don't want. So I'm a little concerned about that.
It remains to be seen how smart these smart widgets are. But, you know, I guess you don't have to use the smart stack, so I'm not going to feel too obligated to. I am going to use widgets, though, I can guarantee you. They showed quite a few widgets, including maps, clock widgets. You can have, for instance, in your clock, it looked like you could have world clocks so that you could see what time it multiple times on your screen. That's very
news,
handy.
News, of course.
News is obvious. Yeah, there's a stock market ticker.
Ugh.
Yeah, like I'd want to see that all the time, right?
Files widget. I know some people who are especially like power users will be definitely into that. I think a notes widget would be great so that I could see my shopping list or something like that right on my home screen. Yeah,
this is all we have right now is the video that Apple showed and these kind of like teases on the Apple website. Notice if you're watching the video, I can see a few widgets here, but I don't know every widget. Like, what is that widget going to be? What is that widget going to be? There's a notes from Apple's Notes app, which is a great app. And you could see that you have family notes in 24. That's the notes folder. So that's kind of interesting. I look forward to this. And I actually, like I said, it's this particularly that's going to make me do the public beta.
Yeah.
Even though I probably shouldn't. I just feel like this is very exciting.
App library. This is a feature that, again, you often will have on an Android device, depending on what launcher you have, where it just shows you all of your apps in one place. Apple has made some adjustments to how it's done. So you may have 6 pages worth of apps. You can choose to hide some of those pages. And then you swipe to the left. And then if you swipe again, or however many pages you have, at the end of it, that's where the app library shows up. It shows you Siri suggestions for the apps that it thinks you're going to use the most. And then it shows you recent apps that you may have downloaded. And then it also gives you access to automatically categorized apps.
Yeah.
So I personally, this is not a feature for me. I already use Spotlight for everything. I have apps in folders, and I don't know what apps they are. I just know whenever there's an app that I want to use, I go to that app by using the.
And I am on the other end of the scale. I mean, I'm kind of OCD in my organization. This front page, and by the way, you know, you put widgets on your front page, you're going to have less room than before. So this front page contains the stuff that I 90% of the time want to use, including some folders that I often with apps in it, that because I can't fit everything I want on my front page. And then what I typically do on the second page is have categories that I know well. And that's one problem I'm going to have a little bit, I think, with the app library. The categories in app library are going to be Apple's, not yours. And they're going to organize them in a way that makes sense to Apple. So you can even see on this webpage, there's Apple Arcade, but there's creativity. What does that mean to you? Is that, you know, what apps is that? There's social, there's entertainment. So I have, you know, a hierarchy that I've honed over many years using iPhones. And I kind of know what's in the audio folder. I have a folder called controls, which is kind of all my home controls and my, you know, stuff like that. And so I know, you know, I know what's in my food folder. It's both cooking apps and restaurant apps, but that's not how Apple's going to do it.
Right.
So I have mixed feelings. You know,
how do folders affect their app library categorization?
Right. I guess I'll just have something more when I scroll to the right here that is whatever I didn't put into a folder. You know, one thing I wish Apple would do, and it didn't look like they planned to do this. Right now, every app on your iPhone has exactly one representation on the screen. You don't. There's no shortcuts. There's no aliases in Mac terms.
Ah.
And I kind of like the idea of, you know, being able to put something in multiple folders, so that you know, my food folder will have the recipes, but I might have a recipe folder that will also have recipe apps. You know, so
I see.
That makes it easier for me to find. And that's how it works, by the way, on computers.
Mm-hmm.
We're used to that on desktop computing. You can create shortcuts on Windows or aliases on Macintosh and put them in multiple places so they're easy to find. A lot of people put them on the desktop. I do think that one of the things you're seeing when we get to iPad OS is a move to making it more like Mac OS.
Yes.
But iPhone, I guess they're not going to do that. So we're not going to be able to do shortcuts or aliases. We're not going to have, you know, as much control as we'd like. Apple's general philosophy and stuff like this is users don't want to go to all that trouble. So we're just going to do it and leave it at that.
Not have them think about it.
We'll do it our way, and if you don't like it, too bad. Android's quite the opposite, and it does annoy people. Android, a lot of customization available. It's a lot of work. And there are people who love to play with their computers and mess it, you know, really customize it, get it down to the... But I think iPhone users aren't that type, and Apple, at least thanks to Apple, has made it that we'll do it. You don't do it. And if you don't like the way it's done, well, that's how we do it.
I'm going to cough first. It was a productive cough. Thank you.
we always have to ask that. How's your temperature?
Oh, boy.
Was there any phlegm? Tell me there was phlegm.
Tell me there was phlegm, please. Up next is a sort of scaling down of the UI in some ways. So I don't know if grabby hands is the right way to show that, but a scaling down of the UI, including a more compact Siri that does not take up the entire screen, including a compact phone that doesn't take up the entire screen, and picture-in-picture options, which I have to reminisce for a moment of a certain former significant other who, when we would talk over FaceTime, and I would have something else that I needed to do, and I'd go to that other thing, then they'd be going, why are you paused? Why are you not paying attention? What's going on that side of the screen? And I, oh no, I have to swipe back to FaceTime in order to activate it and have it start moving again. So I kind of like this picture-in-picture mode for FaceTime calls and other calls. Developers
I always feel busted, you know?
Yes, that's
busted.
What it, yeah.
When I'm talking to my mom, and, you know, she's going on a little bit about the neighbors and what's going on down the road a piece. And not that I'm not interested, Mom, but I also kind of really would like to work my crossword puzzle a little bit. You know, I got a hot game of Tetris going, and you can't do both. It pauses the video, so it would be very nice not to pause the video when I'm in a FaceTime call.
And then to not have phone calls, the notification take up your whole dadgum screen.
Always been a bad design feature. It took Apple a long time to fix it, but they have, and I think that that's kind of critical. Let me show you this.
Especially with all the robocalls.
Yeah. It's so funny. I don't know what's going on with the webpage because, oh, there it is. I was waiting for Simon Pickford to call. Now that he's calling, I can see that it's slid down. It's so funny. I guess you have to scroll up and then you can scroll down. It'll show you Simon calling.
And he calls. And if you
need
to.
That's crazy that hasn't been always in iOS.
Right. I've found it obnoxious. And in fact, it was funny. Stacey Higginbotham the other day, I think it must have been Twig, was talking about how she doesn't answer the phone. And I'm the same way.
Right.
And so this way that phone calls were done was so obnoxious to me that I actually set up a way. it was very frustrating for family members, but I set up a way to never receive phone calls.
Right.
I hate phone calls.
Right.
Don't call me on the phone.
Right.
Anyway.
So this, by the way, you'll enjoy this feature. You can flick away the phone call.
Flick away the phone
if
call.
You don't want it.
And, why in the world are you
Craig Federighi demonstrated it with a flick, and it was extremely satisfying. So a small little notification sliding down over your existing screen to let you know the phone is ringing, just like it does on the Mac, right? And then, or any other computer.
Or any other
device.
Mobile operating system.
Yeah. And then if you don't want it, you flick it off. And if you press the pickup button or the hang up button, similarly appropriate reactions. So I do think compact is good. And by the way, this is from iPhone and FaceTime and third-party apps. So you know, obviously those 30-party apps have to be written this way, I guess. But if you got a call from WhatsApp or Slack, I don't know. That's an interesting question.
There's an API available.
There's an API.
For developers to take advantage of. So Skype can support compact incoming calls. So
picture-in-picture is funny. You were talking about this for FaceTime, but of course it's for YouTube and everything else. I think it's kind of a sign that the iPhone has finally gotten big enough. The screen is big enough that you can have picture-in-picture.
Yeah, while you're doing other things on your phone. I got to tell you, my partner has an iPhone 8, not an 8 Plus, but an 8. And that is his main device for everything that he does. And I am so impressed at what he accomplishes on that tiny little screen. So I'm not surprised that people who are more, who maybe don't think to go, I'm going to go up to my desktop computer and do this because I have so much more room. To have this feature, I think, is going to be great for folks who use these as their main devices for most of their computing.
And that's a growing number, I think. Yes. Right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, we're left in the past here.
Messages. Big changes in messages. Much needed. You were talking about group conversations. I don't have very many friends, so I never do that. But apparently, this was an issue for you.
Yeah, so I found a tweet back in 2017. I tweeted, let's see here. It says, a couple cornfields in my kingdom for name mention notifications in messages on iOS. I tweeted that on October 1st of 2017. Just now on June 22nd of 2020, we have added that feature.
Well, are you going to give? Are you give Tim Cook your cornfields? Who gets the cornfields?
Tim gets the cornfields, I guess.
So you can say if you're responding to Candace, you type Candace and follow it. You don't need an at sign. And it will go to Candace. Is that Candace right? Is that what happens? Yeah. She get a notification. Okay.
It's just like on the Mac where you turn on give me a notification anytime I'm mentioned. Right. You can do that right now on the Mac. And so I thought, why don't we have that feature on iOS? Because I use that. And so in group chats, it's very helpful. But then also they've added threading, which I know some people are really going to like.
They call this inline replies.
Yes.
So you can this is only makes sense in a group chat. All replies are in line on a one-to-one chat, but in a group chat you can view a reply to a specific message and then view replies in the full conversation or as their own thread. So you can minimize them if you don't want to hear the back chat between Micah and Sebastian. You can just minimize that and it goes away. And we see the other members of the group. I can't wait to have some friends because I would like to use this feature. I think
you can also pin your favorite conversations so that they're always available at the top.
That's useful for me
because that feels a lot Slack like.
Yeah. So you have favorites, and it's kind of an interesting look. It's like a bunch of icons from the people you most often talk to, and they're pinned. And then the other thing that's really cool. I love this. So you have the pinned icon, which looks like just like the favorites menu, but the most recent thing in the conversation appears as a little thought bubble. I love that.
I do too.
Isn't that a great idea?
You can set an emoji as your icon for the group, or you can change it to a photo. You can rename them, obviously. So there are just some more. It makes group messages, which are a big part, I think, not just of the way that people use the phone, but it's also a pop culture thing. People talk about the GC, they're talking about the group chat, and it's the group chat that they have with their friends and their family.
I feel so left out. So this is a group chat surf trip that somebody has assigned an emoji to, which is awesome. And you see around the emoji all the people in the group chat and the most recent message. That is very friendly. I like that idea. I think that's... And you youngs, you use this a lot because there's a lot of group messaging going on.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that's interesting.
My busiest group message is with my family.
Family.
But I guess my mom is kind of a young, too.
I actually do have a group message with my family. The problem is my daughter's on Android. Everybody else is on iOS. And this was one thing we were watching. I don't know about you. I was hoping that they might just throw it in and now messages for iOS or for Android. Because until it's fully cross-platform... For those of us who Apple doesn't understand, there are people who don't use Apple products.
Right.
And for those of us in the Apple ecosystem, those people are kind of lesser than. And I don't think that's right. I don't think that's the way it ought to be. It's not inclusive. But,
what's the reason?
Well, and I even mentioned this during the stream. Apple is really good, and they're getting better and better, and they're giving people more and more reasons to never leave the Apple ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
The watch, the phone, the iPad, the Mac OS, everything you need, the TV, is there, and privacy forward, and the functionality is just getting better and better, and of course, they work better together. At some point, most people are just going to choose. And I think, honestly, it's in Apple's interest. They're right to do this. They're very likely to choose Apple. But it's not, it's, you know, I think the answer is for the other guys to do a better job so that they can compete with Apple, not for Apple not to do as good a job.
To do a good, please stop doing a good job. No.
They're too good. And it really makes it like just everybody should just be using Apple stuff. But that wouldn't be good for the world.
My question of what's the reason was actually directed at what is the reason that your daughter uses Android?
She hates Apple.
Oh.
And honestly, that I get that emotion a lot from people who don't use Apple products. I hate Apple.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I hate them. I wouldn't use them in a million years. And she, you know, she grew up using an iPhone, but she kept breaking her phone. And eventually I ran out of iPhones, old iPhones to give her. But I always have a lot of Android phones. So actually, I'm glad she likes Android phones because now there's always an extra Android phone lying around and there isn't an extra iPhone lying around. So I'm glad she likes Android. That makes it easier for me to give her hand-me-downs. But it does make it harder for us to include her. So for that reason, the group, the family group chats are always on Hangouts, not on Messages.
Gotcha.
And that's too bad. You know, I would love... But that, and of course, Apple wants this. This is all part of their plan. The better they are, if they're not on Android, the more people are going to move into the Apple ecosphere. And once you get one Apple device, you're going to, chances are, buy more. And so it's good for business. It's, they're doing the right thing from Apple's point of view. I guess the only answer is I wish, you know, Android and Microsoft would do a better job on their side to give us some competition. Because honestly, I could see a world someday in the future where nobody uses anything but Apple. That's not a good world. That's not the right way to go.
No, it's not. Yeah. We should also mention updates to Memoji, I guess we should mention.
They did something for me. They've got older emoji now.
They do. 6 age options.
Because honestly, I do the emoji and I just feel like I'm pretending to be a hipster. I want an old emoji, and now they have emojis for us people of a certain vintage.
And there you go.
Yeah.
Like a fine wine. And then face coverings, I guess, will be interesting to some
masks.
People as well.
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Why do they call it face coverings, not masks?
Maybe because not everything is a mask.
Because there are also face coverings used in the Middle East and other parts of the world. Women often wear a variety of face coverings. I know they have hijab, the hair head scarves. I wonder if they will have some of the other face coverings available.
That's a good question.
They should.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think they should.
Yes, they should.
They should be. They want to be inclusive. You see, there's the hijab, the head covering.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's why they said instead of saying mask, they said face covering, so that
because there's multiple
other stuff. We'll see when we get it. They have a bindi. Look at you can do a little bindi on there. So
cool.
Yeah, it is more inclusive. You can have a hipster. What do they call that?
Soul patch.
Soul patch. Oh boy, I'm tempted. See, nice. This is
a man
is
a bun,
nice,
a top knot.
Nice older woman. I want a nice older guy that I could be. All I did was I was a hipster with gray hair. It wasn't me. It wasn't right.
It was okay.
It was okay. I sent it to you. We used it for the icon for this social media posting for this event.
Yeah.
Now there's cycling directions. You know, I have to say that's catch up. Google Maps has had cycling for a long time. But they're going to do some other things with the cycling, which is nice. They're going to show you where there's stairs. They're going to show elevations.
Which I like. I think those are cool. But I like the guides feature that they're adding to maps. So it's going to think about you go to a new place and you know, maybe you like to do the research for a new place. I know you, Leo, are an example of that.
Oh, yeah.
But I might, you know, stop in some place and I think, what am I going to do here? I could check out one of these guides and it'll give you information about places to eat and shop and, you know, see things, assuming that we ever travel ever again, which I think is great. And then
I love this as an electric car user, although all electric cars have this built in.
That's right. Yeah.
The plan your trip with charging stations along the way and it'll know what kind of car you have. And so only show the appropriate charging stations. This is a problem currently in electric vehicles. There are different kinds of charging stations. You know, one of the reasons this is good is, for instance, Lisa drives a Chevy Bolt all electric. It has CarPlay. And in CarPlay, you'd rather, if you've got CarPlay, use the CarPlay maps. So it really should have this kind of functionality built into the CarPlay map. So I'm glad they're adding that. And it is a reason I'd probably use Apple Maps with the electric cars.
Also, this wasn't announced on stage, but Maps is going to include a feature that will let you know when you're approaching speed cameras and red light cameras along your route.
Oh, I can see why they didn't want to say that.
Yeah.
Not legal in all states.
Exactly. So you can also see where individual cameras are located on the map.
Right.
Cool. Interesting.
Cool.
Translate. You said you've been using Bing Translate.
Yeah, and I really like it. No, so Translate's been around with Google for a long time. In fact, this looks exactly like Bing or Google Translate. It's got the your language on the left, the other person's language on the right. It'll speak it. It'll take your dictation or typing. It has a variety of languages. Biggest difference between what Google's doing, what Apple's doing here, on-device translations. So that's good for two reasons, privacy, of course, but also you don't need internet. And when you're in a foreign land, not using that precious data is great. Looks like they have a limited number of languages. It was certainly available in a limited number of countries. Arabic, Chinese, English, French, German, Italian, Japanese, Korean, Portuguese, Russian, and Spanish so far. So I've used both Google and Bing Translate. I like Bing a little better. I'm not alone. Father Robert Ballasier, whose Italian is apparently weak, even though he is forced to make his home in Italy. And often when there are meetings in the church, you'd think they'd use Latin. But no, they use Italian, and so he'll put Bing Translator on the desk. He told me this anyway. I don't know if he's still doing it. He's taken Italian lessons since, but he'll put Bing Translator on the desk so that he can read the transcription of the Italian conversations going on. And it's a use. I mean, he speaks enough Italian, but it's useful to see that additional translation. So Bing is nice.
Now, but this is not on device, right?
I don't know about Bing. Google's definitely not on device, but you know, Google is very aware of it, you know, its reputation and privacy, and also of how Apple is privacy first. And they're moving more and more of their intelligence on device. That's one thing Google is doing very consciously, and they announced it at Google I.O. last year, and they're doing a lot of that stuff. So Google's not just willy-nilly saying, no, you have to go to server. I mean, honestly, translation's a hard thing to do. I'm kind of amazed that Apple can do it on device. It just, especially with the limited RAM that Apple ships with both the iPad and iPhone, but it just shows you how much horsepower these devices have, how much capability, you know. But again, we'll have to try it and see how good the translation is. It may be that on device just doesn't, that's one of the reasons you have a limited number of languages, is just not going to work as well.
Yeah, there aren't too many things to mention about Siri, other than there are going to be more web answers available. So instead of having to go, I will need you to look at the phone to see what the answer is. It can just give you the answer. But also, you can send audio messages with Siri, which is good, which I think is nice because I already do that quite a bit. I use the Voice Memos app
to send
audio messages.
Go into the Voice Memo, or you have to go into Messages to say, you know, it's easy to send audio and messages. You know that, right?
Yeah, but here's the problem. And this is why I use Voice Memos instead. The microphone settings that it uses in the actual Messages app are at a very, very, very low quality.
In comparison to
the Voice Memos app. And so it will make a horribly tinny, it sounds like you're making a phone call, essentially. It uses that same sort of a profile so that it can send
it wants to make a small message, yeah.
Yeah, exactly,
so
a lower
data device.
So
if you do a voice recording, you do it high quality. You know, you send it. It might take a little longer, but you're going to send it better quality.
I just think it sounds better. You can hear what everything's
being
said better.
I'm going to guess Siri's going to do the same thing Apple's Messages does. So you may not get off the voice
recordings. I might not be able to use that.
Yeah.
And a cool thing, it's not mentioned on here, but I do want to mention it. Voice Memos is getting a whole new processing engine that's going to reduce room noise and background noise whenever you're using Voice Memos.
That's nice. That's really nice. I like sending audio
languages.
Messages because I feel like I don't type. It's hard to type well and it's distracting. So it's nice to be able to. And to do voice only, say, you know, hey, Shlomo, send Micah a message. I'm on my way. I'll be there in just a little bit. You don't have to worry about it. You know that that's the message you're going to get. You don't have to worry about how it's going to get transcribed.
Exactly.
I think that's great.
You can also use just your voice, and you don't have to have a shortcut to share your ETA now. I don't know why that hasn't already been a thing, but I love my partner and I use that feature more than anything else. When he goes to work and then comes back from work, he will share his ETA with me that I don't have, you know, a concern about him getting into an accident or something like that. And right now you do it in the Maps, you know, you are going somewhere in the Maps app and then you tap share ETA. With this, you can say, hey, Shlomo, share my ETA. So that's
it's not just me that you worry about going into a ditch.
It's me
everybody.
Thing. Yeah. Genuinely, if I don't, I think, oh God, they're probably in a ditch right now.
It's so funny. I send him a message every time I'm on my way to iOS today saying I'm on my way. I have not fallen into a ditch and I will be there, and it sends the ETA. But that was a script, complicated script that Matthew Castanelli wrote for us. Now it'll be a little bit easier because that's built in, right? I love
built
that. I'm very happy about that. I think ETA is really valuable, especially for people like me who are time challenged. And I think all of us sometimes are time challenged a little bit.
Yes. Sometimes time goes a lot faster than I expected to.
Yeah, it gets away from you.
One of my favorite things to talk about and that I've been looking forward to, they talked that there was going to be a lot of mention of Home and HomeKit.
And this is you and Matthew, of course, host our great show, Smart Tech Today.
Thank you.
And so this is right up your alley. So I'm going to completely defer to you on this because, frankly, for instance, they showed privacy first camera recordings, doorbell recordings, face recognition on the doorbell using Apple Photos, a lot of really nice features, but they didn't say whose camera it would work with. And it doesn't work with the most popular cameras, the Google Nest cameras. Now, you said there's a workaround, but wouldn't use all those features, would it?
Well, it can. So there's multiple things to talk about here. So first of all, let me talk about what
you do.
Yeah.
You drive.
Yes. Okay. Here we go. So first of all, I want to talk about what's new in the home system, because Apple's kind of called this whole new category just home in general.
Right.
One of the things that had been suggested that was going to be coming was adaptive lighting. Think about it like night shift, but for your smart lights. So on your phone at a certain time of the day, your phone or your iPad or your Mac will start to turn a little bit orange and take out blue from the lighting. Adaptive lighting, if you've got bulbs that can change colors, then you can set it up so that in the morning it's a nice sort of a softer white. And then as the day goes on, it gets into a brighter sort of bluer light. And then as the night winds down, it gets warmer and removes blue light from your home. So night shift,
that.
But for lighting.
But you'd have to have, of course, Hue or some other kind of light bulbs to do that.
You need bulbs that have multicolor options,
right?
Either the Philips Hue multicolor or the Philips Hue light and color ambience, I think is what they're called, or white ambience lights would work.
Okay.
And then, of course, there are other third-party bulbs. Now, there are some things think about whenever you set up a new smart home device, be it a plug or a light or something like that. And you may not know quite what you want to do with it, but your phone, of course, using Siri suggestions, starts to get to know more information about you. And so it could suggest some automations to automatically set up. For example, enable your porch lights to turn on each evening, which is something that I have, and then maybe even open the garage door as you arrive home. So it'll set up some automations based on, or offer to set those up based on what you're doing. Some improvements to the home status. So in the home app, it'll show you, for right now, mine shows, you know, this device's battery is running low. These lights are on in your home and the temperature is currently blank. There are some more visual controls for that. But let's talk about what you were talking about. Right now, there are multiple devices out there. There are lots of different smart cameras and smart doorbells that have features that let you use sort of activity zones and person tracking stuff. So it uses facial recognition and shape recognition to say, hey, I think there might be a pet outside of your house, or there might be a person outside of your house. Here's who this is, or here's who this isn't. And then with activity zones, you can go in and say, I only want you to send me notifications if someone comes within this area. That area out there is the street. I just want you to show my porch. Well, those features typically whenever you buy one of these smart cameras, cost extra. It's usually a subscription service, because what happens is this video gets streamed up to the internet to the server, and then the server does all of the processing to figure out what part of the screen needs to be paid attention to, what doesn't.
So it's part of the, in my case, Nest Aware subscription.
Yes, Nest Aware subscription.
Right.
What Apple is doing is it is leveraging the home hubs that you have in your house, be it a HomePod, an iPad that you leave at home, or an Apple TV, to use the chips on those devices to offer the same functionality for free and without uploading anything to the server. It happens on the local area network. So it's far more secure in that way.
I want to do this, but...
Now, let me send you, Leo, you're going to love this. There's a fantastic link. Apple has a whole page where you can see every single HomeKit-enabled accessory with links to all of those HomeKit-enabled accessories, and they are detailed by they're separated by categories. So I'm going to send you this link now. It's got anchor links to the page, so you can click on, I want to know about doorbells. So the Robin ProLine doorbell supports HomeKit Secure Video right now. There are also two other doorbells that are HomeKit enabled that do not currently support HomeKit Secure Video, but could eventually.
And you also sent me a link to starlinghome.io, because that's a separate hub that interoperates between HomeKit and my Nest stuff.
Yes. So let's talk about that too.
Because that's very interesting.
So, a long time ago, someone came up with this fantastic idea to create it's a Node.js server. It's based on, you know, Node.js, and it is a way to add a HomeKit-enabled bridge to your HomeKit setup and then connect different things to that HomeKit-enabled bridge that currently is not HomeKit-enabled. So what does that mean? Well, I run Homebridge on a Raspberry Pi, and it lets me connect my smart garage door to the Raspberry Pi Homebridge server, and then from there, that Homebridge server acts as the bridge to my HomeKit home, and I can control the garage door through that system. Now, Starling Home Hub, this is what's cool about it. It started out as a Homebridge plugin. It started out as one of the tools that you could install on your Homebridge setup. But people realized, the guy that created this Nest version realized that sometimes people didn't care about all the rest of it. They literally just wanted to have something to use their Nest stuff with HomeKit. And so he realized, I can make this super simple for people by just creating a singular hub that's kind of like a Raspberry Pi that works for Nest stuff alone. So you connect it to your router, and then your Nest stuff communicates with the Starling Home Hub, and the Starling Home Hub communicates with your HomeKit stuff, and it basically makes the Nest stuff play nice with HomeKit.
That's cool. Now, so I could do it with a Raspberry Pi and their software, or... For $89, I could buy that little dongle. I don't need a Raspberry
Pi. And not have
to
worry about setting up.
Now, am I still going to use my Nest? Can I still use my Nest Aware subscription? It just gives me another interface to it, or does it eliminate the...
It does not. That becomes your choice. You can use the Nest Aware stuff independently. It's not going to take it away. You know, that app will still be available. You can still access the camera from that. This would just make it so that it's also part of your HomeKit home.
And eventually, if I wanted to eliminate the Nest Aware subscription, I could.
Precisely.
And that's
precisely.
Expensive.
Yes. And so that's kind of the recommendation there, is that eventually you would get to that point.
I have two Nest cameras here. I have three Nest cameras at home, and a Nest Hello doorbell. The nice thing is, somebody rings a doorbell, my Google devices, my Google Home says somebody's at the door, and if it recognizes them, it'll even say, hey, Lisa's at the door, that kind of thing. I love that. I'm going to lose some of that functionality, I imagine.
For
Apple
now.
Does not make a photo frame, for instance, you know, a screen.
Right.
But if I leave my TV on, I guess my Apple TV could do it.
Yeah, then so that's the face recognition for that. And I wouldn't be surprised if in iOS 14.4 or whatever they do a point release that has new features, we see more with the face recognition.
Yeah.
Because there have been rumors that the face recognition stuff will be used to say, okay, this person has come home, let's make these automations happen. So instead of it just being location based on your device, it can also use that face detection to determine who's there. So it does person detection, animal detection, and vehicle detection, but now we'll actually identify people that you've tagged in the Photos app for richer activity notifications. So you can be you can choose to be notified, say, okay, now I know my kid has come home, even before maybe their phone connects to the local Wi-Fi or something
like
that.
And the key to this, which I really like, you know, with Nest, I'm actually telling Google who that person is.
Right.
You have to look at all the pictures and say, oh, that's Joe, that's Freddie, that's Tommy. You're not exfiltrating that face recognition information. And in fact, Google even says in some states this is illegal, like Illinois. You don't have to do it manually. This sounds like it does it all automatically using your Apple Photos identification that you've already done. And it does not pass it outside the network, which I think really is much better, not just from my point of view, but from the point of view of the poor people who come to my house.
Right.
I shouldn't be ratting them out to Google.
Are there going to need to be waivers before people can come to your home kind of thing?
Yeah. That's cool. And it is a very nice feature. And, you know, the truth is I do have my phone with me all the time, so maybe I don't need the Google enunciator. I could do it on the phone and my iPad. Those are always
And your watch would notify you too.
Oh, my watch would do it too.
Yeah.
All right. I might have to get one of those.
Yeah,
a little Starling in my house. I have a Raspberry Pi lying around that I could do that with.
I've
written more capable or less?
It's more capable because you can also then use other things with it. So one kind of fun thing is that in my home kit, my home app on my iOS devices, I can actually see the current CPU temperature of my Raspberry Pi.
Oh, that's cool.
That is running the Homebridge platform. And there's like a bunch of stuff that you
can do. Is Homebridge open source?
Homebridge is open source,
yeah. Because there's also OpenHAB. Is it comparable to that?
I don't recommend that one.
Okay. So this is the one to get is Homebridge. And either run it on a Raspberry Pi or get Starling and you don't have to install it.
Yeah. And actually, you can also, Hoobs, HOOBS.org.
Yeah.
If you already have a Raspberry Pi and you just want to have a very easy, ready-to-go Homebridge setup, you can purchase the SD card with a Homebridge setup on it that you just plug into the Raspberry Pi. So Hoobs they include the $169.99 Hoobs in a box, which is literally a Raspberry Pi but specialized that has Homebridge on it. Or you can get the micro SD card that has Homebridge out of the box setup for $19.90. So I'll send you that link too.
Thank you.
So you have that.
And
as
I'll
well.
Be starting to watch Smart Tech Today more often because I'm not going to be able to open my door until I do.
Exactly. How do I get in here?
It would be nice to unify. I mean, I have a lot of these doohickeys, but they're all in their own little world.
And that's nice, the problem.
Yeah, to tie them all together. And by the way, you can run this on a regular computer too. So I have a server running in my house, so I could just run Node.js on my server and do it there.
And that's how I started out doing it. Yeah. Was my MacBook Pro was always at home anyway.
It's always on
at the time, and it was always on. So I just used that. And then once I wanted to do some other stuff with the Raspberry Pi, so I ended up switching to that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about something you were excited about. That's car keys.
Yeah. So unfortunately, you have to have a brand new BMW to take advantage of this right now. But at some point, I imagine other car companies will start to adopt this. The idea is you can unlock and start your car with an iPhone, currently only available on the BMW 540i. And they showed this, the video they showed was very cool. It's using this new U1 chip, which up to now has had very little use in anything. In fact, as far as I know, the only thing that the ultra wideband chip does so far in your iPhone or iPad is let you point it at somebody.
other people who have them as well.
To airdrop something. That's kooky.
It's kooky and silly.
So they built this capability in, but they hadn't yet found a use for it. Well, it will be what enables the car key. So as you keep your phone in your purse or pocket, and as you walk closer to the car, the U1 chip says, hello, here she comes. The car unlocks. You get in the car. They showed in the video, she opened the BMW's glove compartment. There was a Qi charger in there, puts her phone on the Qi charger. The BMW registers that not only is it charging the phone, but that phone is there, and you can start the car and drive off. That's your new car key. But the feature I love the most is now that your car key is virtualized in your phone, you can share it. You can literally, just like an Apple Pay, through messages, you can send your car key to somebody. They showed how you can have parental controls on it, so you can limit how fast the car can go, or I don't know what other features there are. Maybe there's geofencing. So when you send it to a teenager, yeah, can I have the keys to the car, Dad? I send it to you, but you can't go faster than 40 miles an hour. I think that is a fantastic feature. But I also should, as we talk about all this stuff, always point out, Apple introduces fantastic features regularly. Not all of them get adopted. If you have to have a BMW 540i, that really narrows down the potential for this. So it really remains to be seen who adopts it. They said cars coming next year will. I'm going to be buying the Ford Mach-E, their electric, all-electric Mustang, around Christmas time. I'm really crossing my fingers that this is built into the Mach-E. Ford says they'll have a similar feature with their own Ford Pass app. But I think it's always better if Apple implements it because they can use the hardware in the phone. The Ford Pass will work on every phone, and so it'll probably use Bluetooth, maybe Bluetooth LE. It'll be a little different. I'm excited about this. Yeah,
they're partnering, or they did partner with the Car Connectivity Consortium.
Partnered or created, one or the other.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not sure which one. But it developed the MirrorLink technology. Which I guess is a way that some phones and cars can link together. So that's already been a technology. If you've ever done like a rental, you may have heard of MirrorLink.
This would work for being able to do that. I have MirrorLink for opening my garage door, I think. Or is that HomeLink?
Yeah, I think that's something like
but
that.
This is cool because somebody could borrow your car. You just send them the key. Or, if you lose your key, you can easily duplicate your car keys without having to go into the shop. This is an interesting point. I hadn't really thought about it, but what if your iPhone dies? Are you unable to drive your car? Well, it does need power, but they have reserve power for 5 hours.
Mm-hmm. This is part of a technology that was introduced with Apple Pay for the transit pay option, where even if your phone's dead, you can still pay for your transit by tapping with Apple Pay. So they basically have a little bit of reserve battery left for now car key and for transit.
I'm excited about this. We'd heard this is one of the few things we knew ahead of time. We'd heard rumors about widgets and we'd heard rumors about car key. I think that's great. And I do really hope that more car manufacturers adopt it. It's more secure than the fob. And we've talked on Security Now many times about how easy it is to steal a car by using an inexpensive amplifier device you can buy on eBay that will find the car key and then amplify it to the degree that the bad guy can actually get in your car and drive away, even if you've got the car key in your pocket in the office or at home. So I think this will be a more secure solution. UWB obviously has better encryption technologies. I doubt there'll be a way to hijack this. And even if there is, because it's in a phone, it can be updated, unlike your car's key fob. So I just hope this becomes standard on all vehicles. It should going forward. New CarPlay look as well. I don't know if it's got new features. Do you use CarPlay at home?
No, I have a very old car, so no CarPlay for me.
Lisa's Chevy Bolt does, and I have fallen in love with CarPlay.
I like CarPlay.
I love it.
Every time I've used it, I think it's been great. Yeah. So
new wallpaper, new apps, parking apps, electric vehicle charging apps, and this is the one that cracked me up, quick food ordering apps. So as you're tooling down the highway, nowadays in quarantine, this is actually not uncommon. Almost every restaurant in town has curbside pickup. So you could actually say, hey, I'm on my way. Get me some bagels. I'll be there in 20 minutes. And if you can do that through CarPlay, all right, more power to you. So there's a couple of new features in Apple's CarPlay part. All of this part of iOS 14, again, developer mode comes out this week, a public beta in July, and it's this fall with the, as usual, with the iPhone 12. I think that's reasonable to say that's what they'll call it, probably around September. But yeah. iOS 14, I'm pretty excited. I do want to mention our show today brought to you by our great friends at Mint Mobile. I got my Mint Mobile phone right here. You know, this is a perfect match.
That's
the iPhone SE and a Mint Mobile. If you have somebody or you yourself, budgets are tight these days. I understand you want a great phone at a great price and a great carrier to put on it. This is a match made in heaven. The iPhone SE and Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile is just like the big guys. You get all the benefits of the big carrier, but not that high bill. I was spending, I think, close to $100 a month on my T-Mobile subscription. Switched to Mint Mobile, brought it down. Well, you can bring it down to $15 a month. That's for their plan that includes unlimited nationwide talk and text, unlimited, plus 3 gigabytes of data. That's their 3-month introductory plan. I liked it so much, before it was over even, I switched over to the, I paid $300 for a whole year for 12 gigabytes of data a month. That means I'm paying $25 a month for a plan that cost me almost 4 times as much. I still get the great T-Mobile service because they're riding on the T-Mobile network. I still get all of the features, you know, the unlimited nationwide text and talk, and that crazy fast 4G LTE. I just don't pay as much. And Mint Mobile does it by eliminating the stores, by eliminating the, you know, the expensive overhead of having representatives and salespeople and all that stuff. You can bring your own phone. It's a snap. In fact, you don't bring it anywhere. They'll send you the SIM and no charge. So they send you the kit. You sign up, you can port your phone number over, so that's nice. You don't have to lose your contacts, lose your phone numbers. But suddenly, all you're losing is your high-priced bill, and I just think this is great. By going online only, by eliminating the cost of retail, Mint Mobile is passing significant savings on to you. What more can I say? If you're not 100% satisfied, Mint Mobile has you covered with their 7-day money-back guarantee, so don't worry. There's no risk to this. I'm such a fan. I got my Mint Mobile phone right here. And you remember when my iPhone 11 was in the shop, I started using this SE. And honestly, this is a great phone and a great choice. They've got a special price at mintmobile.com/iOS. Cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month with their 3-month introductory plan. And of course, they'll ship it all to you for free. Contactless. There's no store to go into, so you don't have to worry about wearing a mask into a store. They'll just send it all to you. mintmobile.com/iOS. Cut your wireless bill down to just $15 a month and don't lose any of the great service you expect. mintmobile.com/iOS. I'm very thrilled. I mean, I see right here, actually, I get better. I don't know how they're doing this. I think I got better coverage here than I have with my big boy carrier. I'm a fan.
It's a big boy.
Big boys. mintmobile.com/iOS. And do take a look at the SE price and the SE package because that is such a good deal. Should we briefly cover the differences in iPad OS? Because, frankly, the deviation between the iPhone OS and the iPad OS is really starting to take off.
I agree. I think that we should talk firstly about App Clips, then we can maybe take a break to talk about the Fox.
Oh, we haven't mentioned App Clips. Oh, my gosh.
And then come back.
Maybe we should save iPad OS for another time. I mean,
that might be.
We don't want an 8-hour show. There's a lot to talk about. So App Clips is a clever idea that Google first talked about with Android more than a year ago. I don't think it ever materialized.
Materialized. I get it.
Android, but I bet you Apple will get it out quicker. Of course, it's not just Apple. App developers have to support it as well. So what is App Clips?
An App Clip is the idea that it's a smaller version of the app that you're using. So think about when you go to Panera was a good example that they gave in the presentation. And you want to get the little benefits, the coupons or what have you, but you don't want to download the Panera app. Maybe you live in a place where Panera isn't around. And so you can download essentially a portion of the app or load a portion of the app on your phone. You can sign in with Apple. You can use Apple Apple Pay to make the payment and get the benefits of what the app has to provide without having to download the app onto your device. So it's just a small part of an app that you need at that very moment. Though, goodness, they were showing the video. Parking is one of the big ones. I've got three or four different pay-to-park applications that I've downloaded onto my phone that I don't ever use because I only use them in one specific city when I was in that city. And now they're just kind of sitting there. So the idea that I could just whenever I need it, whether I tap an NFC tag or scan a QR code or I get a message or I'm in Maps or I'm in Safari, wherever I happen to be, though the little app clip is available to me to give me access to that part of the app.
I love it. They tried to do it with an ice cream cone, but it didn't work. So you will need, there's a couple of restrictions. The developer of the app will have to offer a clip feature. There's an SDK. It can't be more than 10 megabytes, so it will not be the full app. Most iPhone apps are much larger than that. It is triggered, as you mentioned, by Bluetooth LE, by a QR code, and Apple has developed a new circular QR code that's distinctive, that looks different, so you'll know that that's the app clip QR code. And NFC, which I think is very cool. To my knowledge, the only way you can use NFC right now on any iPhone is with Apple Pay, the tap to pay feature. So I'm really pleased to see them start to use NFC for other things. NFC and NFC tags, they've been around a long time. I mean, more than 5 years. I bought some time ago a bunch of little NFC stickers. We had them in the brick house. That's how long it's been, where I put the sticker on there. And if you had an Android device, because it didn't work with iPhones, that had NFC enabled, you could tap that NFC tag and a web page would pop up and show you information, in this case, about the brick house and that kind of thing. I loved that idea. It just never took off, partly because Apple never supported it. So Apple's finally coming to the table. This is a technology that's been around for a long, long time. They're going to use it for app clips. But you could think of a lot of other ways you could use this kind of thing. I wonder if they will. It'll be
wireless charging took a while as well.
Yeah, they're never first on the block to implement anything. And it's been kind of frustrating for me because the NFC chip's been in iPhones for several generations, but no one was able to use it.
Yeah, you can use them with the Shortcuts app. So I have one, for example.
Oh, nice.
It's on the inside of one of my lamps.
Oh, so you can
use my phone up to my lamp and it turns on. Yeah.
Okay.
So they introduced it with Shortcuts, but it's still so buried in comparison to what we have available now.
Right.
And so there are some, you could share a Wi-Fi router password and things like that. But there are also other ways to do that.
Somebody in the chat room, user 8500, says he used NFC for his glucose monitor. So you could tap your glucose monitor and it would then know that, let me give you your reading. So there is some uses. I didn't realize this, but they're just unusual and not widely known. So,
yeah, HomeKit, you can use NFC to add HomeKit devices as well.
Right.
But Apple's also designing a new type of tag that is both QR code and NFC specifically for app clips.
That little round QR code. They mentioned privacy a lot throughout the talk. And some nice new features. They're going to have a privacy setting for all apps in which the app in the App Store talks about. They compared it to nutritional guidance on food. They did say, though, that Apple will not vet the assertions the app makes. But the app is supposed to tell you how the data is used, how the data is linked to you. And there'll be a quick and easy way in the App Store that you can see, kind of a quick version of the privacy policy. But like other privacy policies, there's not a whole lot of enforcement behind this, except maybe the Federal Trade Commission. So that's something to keep in mind. I think Apple will probably be pretty good about, if it notices privacy violations, punishing the developer. At this point, the developer has to say very clearly what it does and doesn't do. I also love this. There's a little red dot that'll appear next to the camera notch whenever audio or video recording is on. So that is another very useful privacy tool. You won't be able to turn on the camera or the microphone without that little red dot showing up. That'll let you know if somebody's listening in. I think I'm surprised it hasn't been there before. But I'm very glad to see it now. That's a great feature. They're really pushing sign in with Apple and Apple Pay. I should mention that one of the things about those app clips is they require that you offer both Apple Pay and Apple Sign In on the app clips. That's how you sign in. That's how you pay. So that may really help jumpstart Apple Sign In and Apple Pay. They call it upgrading to sign in with Apple. I prefer to use it. It's privacy forward compared to sign in with Google, Twitter, or Facebook. So I would like to see more people use it. To date, not a lot of apps use it, to be honest. Partly because Apple has said if you offer it, it has to be the first thing on the list. It has to really be forward. The ability to share approximate location rather than the exact location.
Which is nice.
That's for news or apps. You don't need to know where in Petaluma I am. You just need to know I'm in Petaluma for weather.
I think about Twitter as an example where there are some times where I want that, but I don't always need it.
So here's the page with all the new features. There's a lot.
There's
so
much.
We have just scratched the surface, and I'm sure we'll have more to show you once we get the public beta of iOS 14. But I am very excited. I think this is probably the biggest iOS upgrade I can remember. Especially things like widgets. That's a huge shift in the way we use iOS.
I do have one thing that I have to complain about, Leo, and I'm really sad to report this.
What is that?
It looks like they've added back in the FaceTime eye contact feature, the zombie eyes.
Because you're really not looking at me now, are you?
No.
You know, they announced this. They showed it. They put it in, and then they took it out? Is that what happened?
They took it out, yeah.
I think because it was creeping people out.
It was so creepy. It was only available in a beta, and I have not seen it since then. But yeah, as of the page showing the preview of iOS 14, it says, FaceTime can make video calling more natural by helping you establish eye contact, even when you're looking at the screen instead of the camera.
Wow.
So our dead-eyed feature is back.
And we didn't mention, but there's new features for the AirPods. There's a lot more.
There's a lot.
We just don't have enough time to tell you everything. There's new new information about, what was it? I saw it really quickly here. I was just scrolling through this long list. Oh, Safari. A lot of the features added to Safari on the desktop will also migrate to Safari on iOS, including web page translation. That's pretty cool. And password monitoring for passwords that have been leaked to the public. So that's all really great. And they do claim Safari is now twice as fast in JavaScript than Chrome on Android. So they are really working on iOS Safari. Lots of new stuff. Wow.
Yes. I think we'll have to make the next iOS today.
Let's do iPadOS. Honestly, I'm even more excited about iPadOS. Just as a tease, as a preview, I feel like they're finally making this iPad what it should have been all along, which is a full-fledged, very useful content creation device. And now that Apple's moving its Macs to the same chips as an iOS.
Wow.
It's going to be an interesting world. You know that
it's all coming together.
If I develop an app for the new Apple Silicon Macs, it'll be compatible with iOS and iPadOS. Mm-hmm. If I have an iPadOS app, I can install it on my Mac unchanged because they're all using the same silicon. This is going to be a whole different world. In effect, it's the unification of all of these platforms. And I think this
whether
is
they
very
really
exciting.
Said that they were going, you know, they always kind of talked about not doing that, but that really is what's going on here. When I logged into the developer account, my developer account, it shows all newly created and existing compatible iPhone and iPad apps will be made available on Mac. Your compatible apps will be published on the Mac App Store on Apple Silicon Macs unless you end their availability.
So, not Catalyst, native.
Yes.
They will run. Because it's all, you know, A, whatever chips.
Mm-hmm. Very
what?
Exciting.
What?
I think that's so fun that I'm going to be able to finally use iOS apps on my Mac eventually.
It is very, very, very exciting.
Well, in the interest of getting you out of here before 2, I just have two little quick news bits. I wanted to mention, so there was this hilarious, if you wouldn't mind pulling it up for me, somebody made on GitHub a little device or a little app called iWoo. It's a little online app. And
okay, wait. Don't tell me. Let me guess. You want to ask somebody to marry you? You use iWoo?
No. Instead, it was that, hey, you know, we're not going to be watching with a live audience, the WWDC keynote. So let's give you some buttons to click using Apple's Animoji or Memoji to make woo sounds.
Were you using the iWoo? Should I make some woo sounds with
make
the iWoo?
Make some woos for us.
Oh, my God. This is great. So this would be the Apple developers in the front row.
Including the giraffe.
Oh my gosh. Are any of these identifiable? Any of these Memojis?
Yeah, not anyone that I know except for the giraffe.
We should be, you know, the giraffe? Oh, he's way up in the back.
My cousin.
Oh, that's your cousin?
Yeah.
There's a giraffe and a robot in the back. It looks like Dan Morin right there. And who's this bald guy? Yeah. Woo brings the experience to you while socially distanced. Let's woo it. Oh, that's hysterical. What a brilliant idea. They only have really two sounds, but I guess that's all you need. And then, of course, there's Ian Thompson in the front row with Born to Woo on his stickers.
Born to Woo.
Woo!
Yeah, I thought this was cute.
That's very
cute. It's silly, but it's cute.
I love it.
And then I wanted to mention that a lot of folks got together by going to WWDCWatch.party.
Oh, what a good idea.
Where they had a whole page where you could see everybody, but then also you could break out into individual little groups, and they had some speakers and things like that. There were about more than 500 Apple developers who attended this online conference, essentially, that let you have a similar, if not the same, experience to actually going to WWDC.
Well, that's kind of what we do, right? But we don't have the Memojis there to help.
Yeah.
That's great. That's really
so
fun.
I just wanted to throw out some little mentions to those things.
And this could still go on because WWDC is going to continue for a while, including, as you mentioned, you know, it'll go through Friday, but coming up in about half an hour, the State of the Union, which is the big kind of deep dive keynote on all the things we saw earlier today.
Yep. All right, let's move on to feedback. Up first, we have Mark from Michigan. In show 503, you showed several great apps for digital media, but most had a cost to them. Here are some free media apps. There's an app called Hoopla, H-O-O-P-L-A, which does audiobooks, comics, and ebooks for free. There's Libby and Overdrive, which offer some audiobooks for free. There's RB Digital, which has audiobooks and magazines, including The New Yorker. And then, for some people, lynda.com, where the library will offer access to some courses at no charge. So Mark was just pointing out that either via a library membership, library card membership, or by finding these other apps, there are ways to get some media that doesn't cost you any money.
And we should mention lynda.com is now LinkedIn Learning, our sponsor.
And, yes.
Yes. Exactly. In fact, the free courses he's talking about is the TWIT offer where you get 1 month free if you go to linkedinlearning.com/TWIT. So that is a great way to do it. And thank you for the plug. We appreciate it. You can go to lynda.com, but LinkedIn Learning is also
is the reroute. Yeah.
Cool.
And then Paul from L.A., you guys, we're getting called out a little bit here, Leo. You guys are often dissing on Apple TV Plus programming, so I'd like to recommend two shows that are wonderful, speaking as a former film
critic.
Not Mythic Quest, no. And in fact, I'm excited. So first, there's Central Park, which is an animated musical comedy created by and featuring Josh Gad.
Okay, you lost me at animated musical comedy, but go on. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I like Josh Gad.
I've been watching this show.
Is it good?
And so it's hilarious because most of the characters are people from Hamilton. And so the guy who...
you have me at Hamilton.
See? Yeah. So the guy who plays... oh, goodness. I think it's the guy who plays Washington. I can't remember at the moment. But basically, there's a big old black guy who's playing this very scrawny little white woman, old white woman.
Wait a minute. I'm confused.
So let me.
She's drawn scrawny, but.
Yeah, she's like an elderly white woman. Who works for this woman who's basically like.
But she sounds like George Washington in Hamilton.
Yes, that's exactly.
Oh no,
what I'm
I
saying.
Think I know who you're talking about.
But it's not George Washington.
No. He's the. I know who you're talking about. Oh, what's his name? He brought the Black Regiment to fight in the Revolutionary War.
David Diggs.
Oh, David Diggs. No, that's Jefferson.
Jefferson.
That's,
yes.
That's both Jefferson, Lafayette and Jefferson. David Diggs is one of my favorites.
Yes, I was thinking of Lafayette. So David Diggs plays Helen, this scrawny elderly white woman.
It's kind of a scrawny, tall black guy, but it's close. You know, it's good.
And then Stanley Tucci plays this short old white woman that kind of runs New York. Kristen Bell plays Molly, which is one of the young women.
All right. Well,
Titus Burgess, who I know you love, plays the younger brother.
Yeah.
And then Leslie Odom Jr., which was also from Hamilton, he plays the dad.
He's Aaron Burr.
And so, yeah, it's these hilarious voice actors and, of course, excellent vocal musicians.
This looks like the style of Bob's Burgers guy.
It is.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay.
It's actually produced by, or in part, it's with Lauren Butchard, which that's the guy who voices Bob from Bob's Burgers.
Yeah.
That was a recommendation. And then that's not who. Does he voice Bob? Or is he? He's just the producer. Oh no, I think he's just the producer of Bob. Who play? Anyway, point is, he's big at Bob's Burgers. And then here's the second one. And for Leo, I can recommend the new documentary Dads, directed by Ron Howard's daughter, and it's a movie premiering
about
this week.
Dad.
It is highly recommended. The platform is really creating some strong content, says Paul, the film critic from L.A.
All right.
So Central Park, absolutely. I love it. I think it's hilarious.
I'll have to watch that.
Every episode.
All right. Okay. And you know, Apple has bought a bunch of catalog material. They're trying to beef up Apple TV Plus. One of the things missing from Apple TV Plus is it's all new stuff. And so they're starting to buy up old stuff so that they can compete with people like Peacock, HBO Max, Netflix, Amazon Prime, and all the others who have deep catalogs. So that's, you know, that's good. We all got it for free for a year. You know, anytime you buy an Apple device, I don't know how long that deal's going to last.
Yeah, it'll keep going.
Yeah, I have to buy another Apple TV. Mine's kind of, you know, I just have to say this, throw this in. They don't have fans in those Apple TVs. They overheat, and they overheat a lot. And I've had a number of Apple TVs die on me. Not the newest 4K, but the older ones. Have you ever had this happen? You're watching, I guess it's getting hotter and hotter, and it starts glitching. You know, the screen goes in and out black. What I always do in that case is reset it. You hold the top two buttons, the menu and home button, down for, I think, 5 or 6 seconds. You'll see it go blink, 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 and then it'll go blank and start up again. Usually that's enough time to cool off. You can watch it for another half hour before it starts fritzing.
So do you have any of the 4K ones?
I do, and I haven't had that ever happen on the 4K. So I'm thinking that maybe they did a better job of cooling. They don't want to put – I understand they don't want to put a fan in it, but they really do need to be aware of the fact. I think these – that's my guess is these guys overheat after a while.
Must be.
Yeah.
Yeah. All righty. Let's move on to our app caps.
Yep. All right. I've got my app cap right here. We wear these caps. Why? Why do we
wear
these caps?
Because it is a way to honor our app picks of the week. The apps that we want to share with people that either we're using or we want to use. I'm wearing a very boring hat, but that's because it is my hat that I bought at the Apple Park Visitor Center.
Oh, well, that's not boring.
It's got a very subtle Apple logo on it.
I mean,
incredibly
couldn't
subtle.
Be more subtle, right?
Yeah.
And I am wearing a pith helmet and aviator goggles because I'm about to launch on an adventure.
He's going on an adventure.
But you start, my friend.
Yes, I think I will start. I am talking about, let's see if I can't make this work.
Yep, that's, I had a feeling that was going to happen.
That is the clearest screen I've ever seen. It's beautiful. You can almost see right through it.
So, I am talking about an app called Fontcase. And Fontcase is an app that lets you install typefaces on your iOS devices. This is a ridiculous, and I'm just going to say the word, stupid, utterly ignorant.
But I love
process.
Different fonts, and that has always been one of the things that a little bit frustrates me about iOS. You can't change any fonts.
Yeah. So Apple at one point, I believe it was in iOS 13, added the ability to add fonts to your iOS devices. However, the way that it has to be done is through a configuration profile.
Oh, please.
Why? God only knows.
Oh,
but that
please.
Is the current way to do it. So this is the good thing about Fontcase. A, it's free. But B, they have partnered with Icon Factory, which is a reputable company.
Awesome company.
Yes, that we know, as it is even said in the sort of why they've partnered with Icon Factory, is because Icon Factory has for years treated their customers with respect. And it shows that, you know, even though you're installing a configuration profile on your device, if there's a company to trust, then you could feel a little bit more comfortable trusting the Icon Factory with this. So what I love about it is that it tells you everything you need to know about why the font, how to install the fonts, and what it takes and what the process involves. So essentially, it creates a local configuration profile that you download to your device and install that has the fonts built into it. And then you go in and you can update the settings to add those fonts. So I've added some typefaces that I use. I just did this Nexus Lab one as an example. And you can import from different places. So you can import from iCloud Library or Dropbox or any place that's available to access via the file browser. You select it, and then it shows up on your fonts page. And then you can see, you know, all of the information, including what it looks like, whether it's a monospaced font, how many glyphs are available, you know, where, who made the font, etc. And this, of course, includes OpenType fonts and others as well. And then you tap the install button. Again, it creates a local profile that you download. You allow the configuration profile, and then you have to go into the settings app to install it. But what I like about it is, again, it's a completely free app partnered with the Icon Factory. And so if I want to install fonts, this is an app that I can trust to actually make it possible to do so. And then, as I said, you can easily kind of see the fonts that are available on your device and make adjustments to them and remove them if you don't like them. So
that's great stuff. Love it.
Font case.
Font case. Much easier than adding a configuration profile. Now, there is a cat. There, every game, for every game, there is a category, and every category has a game.
Yes,
there is a category called the Endless Runner. Are you familiar with that? Endless Runner games. Those are games like
where you run endlessly.
Temple Run, where you're running endlessly. This is a new one in the genre, as they say, called Skydancer. And I have to say, of all of the Temple Run games I've played, this one is the most beautiful, sounds the best. Unfortunately, I can't really airplay it, but I'll endeavor to show you on the screen, and then you'll see, because I can't get to the living room. But you can kind of hear the music. The music's great. Yeah, it's free, and then there's in-app purchases. There's a whole store mechanic and all that stuff. But I found you can actually, for a couple of bucks, eliminate the most of the annoying ads and play the game. And it is a beautiful game. It is an endless runner, which means you never stop running. You control it with the iPad, finger controls. Oh, let's jump.
Nice.
And it can be challenging as any endless runner because, well, you'll see in a minute, it's going to get much more complicated. We're capturing rings. We're jumping. There's a little bit of turning. That's not so hard. But when they get multiple roadways, whoa, it's sometimes hard to get those roadways. It is a very fun, beautiful game. Gives you lots of challenges and lots of flying, which I kind of enjoy. And points for doing things like precise jumping. The controls are easy. It is pretty. And whoa, how am I going to get over there? Oh, boy. That was close, wasn't it? That is a long way to go. This is the best run I've ever had. You don't mind if I keep doing this until I... Oh! Almost fell off the edge there. So this is an endless runner game. A lot of fun. Can be really hard. Oh! Now, if you want to keep somebody going, you can watch an ad. So I can revive David by watching an ad. I don't like to watch ads, so no. I'm just going to keep playing. But I did get all the multipliers. I did 5 perfect landings. I got a lot of rings, so I got some points. And now if I want, I can either go back to the main menu or I can restart. And let's go all the way back to the beginning. This is a really fun runner. I don't actually recommend spending any money on it. Well, you have to spend a couple of bucks just to get rid of the ads in between every run. That's no fun. But for a couple of bucks, you get rid of those. Then you can kind of play it. There is a lot. I wish there weren't so much, but there is a lot of mechanics to get you to, you know, buy stuff. I'm going to claim my stars. You can claim as you play. You can get new characters, all of whom really pretty much the same. Look, for only $2, I can get the Head Start Pack, which means I dash forward 20 yards at the start of the run. No, who cares? A coin magnet? That wouldn't be so bad. I'm going to pass. So the next event starts. You know, it's one of those. I really don't like that. But at least you get to play. You get to run. And look, here's a moonlit night we're going to run in. Let's see if I can do 5 precise jumps. Oh, doesn't it make you feel athletic?
Yeah, I feel like I'm getting a workout.
Like I'm getting a workout even though I'm sitting on my duff.
If only you had WatchOS 7, then you could get that cool down workout.
Treasure chest. Anyway, a lot of fun. Nice Endless Runner. If you like Endless Runner games, you're tired of Temple Run and Mario Run and all the other runs. This is a this is a one that's similar, but you know I think it has some nice features. Really is pretty. I think that's its best selling point. It really is a pretty game to play. And not super hard. Whoa. Free fall. Got to reach the platform next time. That's my app cap, Sky Dancer. And that is iOS Today for this week. Boy, it was a lot of fun getting together with you this morning. If you want to watch our coverage of the initial WWDC keynote stream with Tim Cook, Craig Federighi, and a host of others, that's on our Twit News feed. Please subscribe to that so you'll get all the breaking news stories. I'm going to come back in about 15 minutes for those of you watching live, and we will do the State of the Union keynote, which I think will be even more interesting because it's going to be the deep dive. Micah Sargent will be back about 4 o'clock this afternoon, Smart Tech Today. And, of course, I'll see you next week on iOS Today. Normally, we're doing it early this week. Normally, we do it every Tuesday, 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern. That is 1600 UTC. You can tune in, watch live any of our stuff, or listen live at twit.tv/live. Subscribe, though, is the best way to do it. Get your favorite podcast application. Search for iOS Today and subscribe. You'll get it that way every week the minute it's available. Micah, how would people get on the show if they have a question or a comment?
If they've got a question. Question, a correction, or have some suggestions of shows to watch, it's iOS Today at twit.tv.
We appreciate those. If you record it, put it up on YouTube privately and send us the link, that's even better. We like to see you. Thanks, Micah. Have a great week. I'll see you next time.
Thank you as well.
On iOS Goodbye. Today. Bye-bye, everybody. So long.
Check out other shows here on Twit TV, including my show, Hands-On Photography. On this show, I'm going to show you how to get the most out of your camera, as well as be a better post-processor. So head on over to twit.tv/hop and subscribe now.